Paul Steinhauser. He reports nationally for Fox News and locally GMI Studios. Good Morning, Hampshire. The Pulse of an H. Hey, Google. Hey, Alexa, play the Pulse of an H. Also, big meeting with Governor DeSantis in Florida and Donald Trump. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, good morning, Jack. Absolutely. You know, first time these two guys have met in a long, long time. Trump spent a whole year just eviscerating Ron DeSantis. DeSantis dropped out of the race for the White House 2 days before our primary here in New Hampshire after a lackluster finish in Iowa. He did endorse Trump, but hasn't campaigned for him. They met face-to-face yesterday morning down in Miami, Florida, and sources say that DeSantis has agreed to help raise money or get, you know, tap into his very powerful donor network to help raise money for Trump as Trump tries to close the fundraising gap with President Biden. So big meeting there. Hey, Jack, one other thing happening right back here in New Hampshire. Blink if you missed it, but the New Hampshire Democrats held a presidential primary over the weekend. That's right. Remember the one they held back in January? That was unsanctioned. So they held a very small affair. Joe Biden did win it again, no surprise. And that'll give them the green light now to send their delegates to the convention. The Democratic convention will be in Chicago in August.
Was that like that eclipse that I missed, Paul? No, I'm sorry. I had to say that. Hey, Paul, real quick, I guess. What's your quick reaction? You are a political director at CNN. You're at Fox now. You've done the national thing. This is a poll that CNN is playing up big, which makes me a little bit scratch my head, but it's not very positive for Joe Biden. Trump beating Joe Biden overall in this poll, I think 49-43. And look at these numbers. What do you make of this?
And people are wondering about this poll because it seems like an outlier, but maybe it isn't, right? Because just about every other poll recently has it pretty much dead even between Biden and Trump. Biden has definitely made up ground in other polls, and now this one comes out and shows Trump way ahead. And you mentioned, Jack, the numbers that are really interesting. Most Americans now feel that Trump's White House tenure was a success, and most Americans are calling Biden's years in the White House a failure. That's tough numbers for Biden.
Build back better. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Jack.
Find all this stuff amazing. Doug Tengden, worldmarketadvisors.com. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Jack. How was your weekend?
It was kind of nice. It was pretty nice overall. Thank you. And you?
It was gorgeous. It was absolutely glorious. One of these weekends, I'm going to get back up to Tuckerman's, which is, of course, my favorite place in the world to go in the spring.
There,
but haven't been there yet. It's it is really beautiful up there.
All right. What do you think? Things slowing down or not as we go into the summer and fall?
Well, you know, actually, things have picked back up. I know that people are saying the economy hurts, and I get that. And I think a lot has to do with, you know, gas at $3.50 or $3.75 a gallon and eggs at $4 a dozen or $8 a dozen. I can't really figure it out. But I think that inflation has really got people concerned. Consumer spending has been very strong. And, you know, I don't really trust what people say. I trust what they do. And when we got reports last week from Capital One and from Visa and from PepsiCo and from all these different companies, they're showing that consumer spending is pretty strong. And that's got, you know, a mixed blessing, because it's good that people are able to spend money, but it's bad if they're spending more than they have and they feel like under the weather that way.
Well, they've been doing that for a few years now, I think.
Yeah, but I think these higher prices that have been driven by both a combination of fiscal and Federal Reserve policy are absolutely biting people. And the Fed, while Powell in December said we could cut rates and the market went a little bit crazy, now he's walked it back and said, you know, maybe we'll just leave rates where they are. And that's where he's taken things in terms of interest rates. Probably they cut rates again, but the market is saying, yeah, maybe once. We're not certain about this. So he's walked back his expectation of lots of cuts to, you know, maybe once or at most twice. I actually think they're leaning towards not moving them at all based on what people are saying now. So,
yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see.
You know,
inflation has proven to be remarkably sticky here.
It is. And I'm just telling you, I think things are a little softer than a soft landing, but I may be wrong. And the other thing, Doug, is I always look as the best barometer at real estate, because it's the most real thing to me. Now, we have an affordable housing crisis in the area, but I'm talking about if you're a home seller and you want to put your home on the market. We happen to live in one of the hotter markets in the country per capita. It's not normal here. In other words, you can look at, you know, over the weekend, Doug, I'm sorry, I don't want to tie you up, but I'll say this quick. The NFL draft was in Detroit, and it was good for the area because Detroit has been hit so hard the last decade or so with high crime rates, you know, the auto industry changes that, you know, some homes in Detroit, you can get a home in Detroit for $50,000 or $60,000 or $70,000 or under $100,000. What can you get in New Hampshire for under $100,000 other than a shack or a small little shed to put in your backyard?
You're absolutely right. I think for under $100,000, you can go to the carriage shed, which has these pre-built homes that'll deliver on via trailer. I got a chicken coop that way, so you could get a chicken coop for under $100,000.
Yeah. So my point is, I'm looking at real estate locally in hot markets, and there's no question something's going on in North Carolina, Tennessee, South Carolina. They're the new hot spots. But in general, the people that borrow a little bit of money to buy homes, it's slowing down. The people that are still getting homes for over $1 million locally are people from out of state with just a lot of liquidity and cash, and they're not borrowing anything. That's what I'm summing up the real estate. I'm seeing things last longer. I'm seeing little things locally that I didn't see 3 to 5 months ago. Price cut, like in the, you go to Zillow, Realtor, and you look at a home, and I'm just being, you know, you live in Hanover. Aetna, New Hampshire, price cut, $50,000. Time on market, 39 days. I'm seeing a lot more of those.
Right. Right. There are more of those because interest rates are really biting and people are saying, you know, I can't afford that payment. I can't afford to borrow however many $100,000 they normally would do. So interest rates are certainly taking a bite. But I'll say this. New Hampshire is unique because we get all these tax refugees from both Vermont. Here in the Upper Valley, we get tax refugees from Vermont, and down in southern New Hampshire, where you are, you get tax refugees from Massachusetts. They sometimes forget where they're running away from, but fortunately, we have maintained our status as a low tax state. That has affected our real estate prices. There's no question about that.
Yeah. All right, Doug. Anything else? We're in the final minute. Doug Tangney, World Market Advisors.
Well, I just think we need to keep an eye on what's happening, what companies report. And if they continue to report strong earnings, I mean, that's going to be an indication that the economy is going to remain strong. And this strong economy, like I said, it's a mixed blessing because it's great that the economy is strong. We don't want it to fall out of bed. But inflation is just remaining sticky here, and that's going to affect people's attitudes going into November.
All right, Doug, enjoy the sun, enjoy the milder temperatures.
Jack, you have a great week.
Anna Brown, Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. I'm sorry, Anna, I just want to get a little bit of the updates on what I'm seeing in the universities. And, of course, citizenscount.org, a wonderful bipartisan, nonpartisan effort to look at our civic engagement, our lawmakers in Concord, pieces of legislation. She keeps an eye on this. And actually, it's a busy time period right now in Concord. Take it away, Anna.
It is. And I actually have a bill to talk about that fits in exactly with what you were talking about. As usual, roughly 1,000 bills. There's usually something that relates. So this week, the Senate is going to be voting on a bill that would govern free speech on college campuses. So, for example, the bill prohibits public colleges from limiting activity to, quote unquote, free speech zones or other restrictions that they would put on demonstrations or events. And with some allowing, you know, reasonable time and place restrictions. So the same way that the free speech works in terms of, you know, if you want to have a parade downtown, it's perfectly reasonable that everybody that wants to have a parade has to, you know, file the permit to make sure that everything is safe for traffic and so on. But this bill, of course, was filed long before we saw the protests that are happening at college campuses related to Israel and Palestine. This was, in fact, sponsored mostly by Republicans who were concerned about discrimination against certain conservative causes that would want to have demonstrations or events on campus. So that being said, we're now in this really interesting place where the bill does have bipartisan support and does look like it's probably going to pass the Senate. It came out of committee with a 5-0 vote in favor, which is a good sign that it's going to get passed by the full Senate as well, already passed the House. So it's an interesting backdrop. You know, I think New Hampshire, frequently our colleges and universities, when there have been ratings across the country, have been rated fairly well on their accommodations for free speech and diversity of viewpoints. But I did wonder if this bill was going to start hitting some roadblocks, given what we are seeing across the country at places such as Columbia University. So a little dovetail there. You know, you didn't think that what you were talking about might tie into the New Hampshire legislature, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's, you know, one bill among many. And so another interesting policy sort of contrast between the House and Senate I wanted to pull up was a debate about drug policy changes. The House and the Senate seem to be really on different pages about that this year. And there are a couple votes coming up this week that really demonstrate that. So earlier this year, the state Senate passed a few bills that were looking to tighten or really enhance penalties related to fentanyl. So, for example, SB 316 creates a separate new class of a felony with a minimum 5-year prison sentence for entering New Hampshire to deal fentanyl. And then there is also other bills they've had to increase, you know, the minimum penalty for death resulting, which is when you deal a drug and then someone dies from an overdose. So that those bills all came out of the Senate. There's going to be a vote this Thursday in the House, and the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee is tied 10 to 10 on whether or not it should pass the bill. So it's going to be kind of a debate, I think, in the House about, you know, are these stiffer penalties the answer to the fentanyl overdoses that we are seeing? Meanwhile, the House took a different route. They passed HB 470, which would decriminalize some drug checking equipment, such as fentanyl test strips. So this is a harm reduction approach that would ideally allow people to identify if there is deadly fentanyl added to whatever drugs they are using, even though they're illegal drugs. So the House passed that. But now the Senate Judiciary Committee voted 3-2 to kill that bill. So that bill's coming up in the Senate. So it really seems like the House and the Senate are on different pages this year about what we should do next about the continued addiction crisis in New Hampshire.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I haven't seen, and I checked with one member of the Daily Media from a political point of view, and I haven't, he's not sure. So the reason why I say this is one of the stories you heard about, I don't know if you heard on the presidential side, and we can talk about it, Donald Trump going to meet with Ron DeSantis of Florida after being sort of bitter primary rivals, but now maybe on the same page looking at the fall in Miami. But DeSantis, a week ago, on the Florida Commissioner of Education, the analogous would be Frank Edelblue here, got out in front of a story that The Hill had on President Biden and the administration wanted to change Title IX for women's sports to allow men to compete in a transgender, you know, equalization effort here, if you will. And Florida says, look, we're not going to comply. We're not. Commissioner, we're not going to do this. Have we heard anything about this? And what is this going to be, a state reaction by state, or is it a federal? I mean, do you think New Hampshire will take a position here or not, given some of the chatter locally in the legislature on some of these ancillary bills dealing with gender and school and sports and things like that and parents?
Sure. There is, in fact, there's a bill that's going to have a public hearing tomorrow before the Senate Education Committee that would prohibit anyone with the reproductive biology and genetics of male at birth from participating in middle and high school sports teams that are designated for women. And so this is similar to bills that we have seen debated across the United States, and some of them have passed for sure. And right now, I think that it's fair to say that Title IX is in flux. It remains to be seen. It's sort of up to the executive branch right now. What's the interpretation? What's the guidance on what this means? And then Congress, of course, would have the opportunity to step in and say, okay, regardless of how the executive branch wants to interpret it, this is exactly what we intend with Title IX in terms of gender and transgender athletes. So I would say that it's very much in flux. It has yet to be really definitively ruled one way or another. And I personally would not be surprised if this does end up going to the courts and that we end up seeing a court case work its way through, unless Congress gets together and can pass legislation that clearly says this is what Title IX means in terms of gender, which frankly, Congress getting together to definitively pass anything these days, regardless of what party it comes from, is seems almost no chance whatsoever. So I think that it is definitely a worthwhile question for people to ask state-level candidates as well as federal-level candidates. Congress and the presidency and our state legislators are all weighing in on this, and it's still an undecided issue.
Yeah, interesting. All right, anything else catching your eye? Anna Brown, CitizensCount.org.
Well, there's one little one that I'm sort of curious about. So we've all maybe heard of rumblings about pharmacy benefit managers and how that may or may not be contributing to health insurance costs. Of course, health care costs in general continue to just skyrocket for all of us. I'm sure we've all felt that pain at one point or another. So SB 555 is going to have a public hearing also tomorrow. That came out of the Senate already. And it's definitely looking to regulate and rein in pharmacy benefit managers. You know, more reporting requirements, more about the rebates and what the insurance can keep or have to make available to the people who pay for this insurance. And I think there's an interesting debate about, okay, would this actually help its customers, the insurance policy holders, or is this just going to add more regulation and complexity to an already complex system? It's not a subject that I am very up on, but I am definitely curious to see how that unfolds, since pharmacy benefit managers do seem to be a target for health insurance reform.
And speaking of that, thank you, Anna Brown, Citizens Count, citizenscount.org. Thank you, Anna.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Okay, these stories, unlike for Erin Rial, who's a total professional and awesome NBC News Radio Nash correspondent, she has the objectivity sometimes and the calmness to stay calm. But when I was talking earlier, Erin, and good morning, hope you had a good weekend, talking about, you know, the students at Columbia demanding of the university to divest in stocks related to Israel. And I saw Google workers demanding that Google, pull back on that cloud contract they sold to the government of Israel, even though that's available to any government out there. And you know what the heart of this is? I'll just get this off my chest. These students say that they're pro-Palestinian in peace, and some say it's not anti-Israeli. Then why would you be concerned if your university has an investment in Israel? So the point is, you also see powerful alumni like Robert Kraft, who went to Columbia, the Patriots owner, saying, we're going to start to pull back on our donations. So this is cutting both ways, but talk about the call to divest in stocks related to Israel. Good morning, Erin.
Good morning. Yes, from New Jersey to Southern California to Boston, it doesn't matter where they are. The protesters are chanting, disclose, divest, we will not stop, we will not rest. Basically what they want is for their schools' endowment funds to withdraw their investments in companies that profit from Israel's military action in Gaza, specifically weapons manufacturers and tech companies that do business with Israel's government. Now, this call in and of itself is not a completely hollow request, because in the past, universities have divested when protesters have called for it.
Mm-hmm.
One example is a lot of universities, in Columbia included, they divested from fossil fuels and private prisons. These are because you had student protesters. Also, in the 1980s, there was a widespread divestment movement in South Africa during the apartheid there. But it is because of these previous divestments that economists were able to study them, and research finds that there was very little correlation between these divestment campaigns and the stock value or the company behavior. Because essentially, when you sell the shares, you give someone who cares less about the issue a voice, and you give up your own.
Yeah, and, you know, we have seen this, and I don't know how much, and I mean this sincerely, Erin Rial, before I let you go, I don't know how much of these protests are, because this is something you and I, and no one's really talked about. It might be, I'm not suggesting as a former news director, an interesting story for you and your national stuff, but J-Dog, you know what, we haven't thought about this. What we're seeing for the first time, and I was watching this documentary on Bobby Kennedy on Netflix when he ran for president. We're seeing 1960s again on college campuses for different reasons. But there's a very anti-police, anti-U.S., but really, whether it's pro-Palestinian or not, we're seeing a real movement now. This is the first time, Erin, in my memory, where the college students, the university students, are feeling like they're getting the upper hand. And it's during an era of social media. We didn't really have this 10, 20, 30 years ago where students can send a text message to a friend. Hey, we're protesting today. I'm on the east side of the quad. Come and hang out. It's really cool. And you can post things and you can track it. So this is the first time we've seen sort of this college movement against establishment, against the president, call for a no vote of confidence against our university president. We're getting the upper hand during social media.
You know, it's really fascinating. I recommend you check it out. The monologue from Bill Maher this past Friday is exactly what you just kind of touched upon. And it's all about the idea that, is this protest as much about what we saw in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, or is it much about me and social media and, like, look at me and this is what I'm doing? It's a good question to ponder and something worth checking out and thinking about more.
Yeah, it is. And it's interesting because it's, you know, again, I don't want to sound like a parent who's been there, done that, but there's obviously a core group of probably professional agitators helping to organize this. But for most of the students, it's a mixture, right? I'm not sure how many really know what they're doing. Some really are into it. Some really believe it. I'm not saying that's not the case. You know, we saw the 60s and the Vietnam War became very unpopular, but it grew into an anti-military, anti-police, anti-everything establishment. We'll see where it goes. Aaron Real, thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, talking a little bit about the housing market, speaking of the economy slowing or maybe getting so expensive that it's now cheaper to rent than buy. Good morning, Rory.
Yeah, Jack, good morning. Plus, of course, that DeSantis-Trump meeting we had this weekend was interesting, too. But those numbers out by Bankrate showed that in the top 50 metropolitan areas in the country, yeah, it may be better to rent than to buy. And I guess you could compare it to price versus value, right? But the price, the cost of renting on average is about $1,900 a month. But the price of a mortgage monthly is now averaging $2,700 a month, considering the median priced home is $412,000. So, yeah, dollar for dollar, it's probably cheaper to rent than buy. But long term is the real question here. And, of course, the answer to that is going to depend on your family situation.
And, Rory, I know there's a lot of variables, but it's interesting. Over the weekend or just this morning, or was it yesterday? I can't remember. I was just calculating because I was reading articles about real estate. To show you how far we've come from 2.9 to 3% mortgage rates, fixed 30-year, you could have borrowed not many months ago at 3%, $400,000. You just mentioned the median home price, $400,000. And you're going to be paying less than $1,500 a month for a mortgage, $400,000. Today, $400,000 is closer to $3,000. It's doubled, literally like the interest rate. So that's the big difference there.
Yeah, and for some reason, you know, we're seeing the mortgage rates go up and the housing values or prices keep going up as well. And that, you know, we expect one to affect the other, but we're not seeing that yet.
Yeah, all right, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Delta Dental Radio, the show on the weekends, and, of course, author of books, plural, including Stories from the Starting Line, with some good news to get our Monday going. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Jack. Are you sure you're not on the short list?
No.
Too funny. Yeah, it's a lot of great news. So over the weekend, Miss New Hampshire was crowned Emily Spencer. And I bring this up only to emphasize that while certainly these young women are all polished and, you know, very confident, it's about scholarships, and thousands of dollars are raised so these young women can finish, you know, their schooling. So Emily Spencer was the overall winner, and Thursday night I was able to give out three awards to Megan Elwell, Corrine Kelly, and Mackenzie Howe for science, technology, engineering, and math. We have a scholarship program which we funded, Delta Dental has funded for years, and the young women apply for it, and they describe how what their schooling, how it relates to STEM. So I just kind of my shout out to the Miss New Hampshire Scholarship Program in that it is all about scholarships. And so I really want to make sure everybody has a positive view of the Miss New Hampshire Scholarship Program. And I think we'll be really happy with Emily Spencer and last year's winner, Dr. Brooke Mills. Probably most people know, but she is the daughter of Dr. Stephanie, who you hear on the radio. And Dr. Stephanie herself was a Miss New Hampshire back in the 90s. And now her daughter is now also a chiropractor. So pretty cool.
I met her. She's an outstanding young person. I mean, she's been an advocate for you know, concussions in sports and awareness, but just a very poised, smart, great young person.
Absolutely. So that was those duties, and then today I was at, this morning, I was at New Hampshire Hospital. We unveiled a new mural that Delta Dental and Dartmouth Health and a few other companies helped sponsor with the New Hampshire Business Committee of the Arts, so that the nurses and doctors who need to go to the break room now have a beautiful mural in the break room. So
you might think, well, how does that relate to mental health? Well, it does. I mean, you know, if you're in that challenging environment, and I have a niece that works there, and it's somewhat stressful. So to be able to go in and have a break for the nurses and doctors is important. So that was brought a big smile to my face. And then over the weekend I had two races. The first one was in Franklin for the V&A, nice little course up there. Of course, the V&A helps serve so many people. And then Sunday we were in your neck of the woods in the seacoast doing a 10K there. So it's a fun weekend, and I just again want to shout out to you because I still get, you know, lots of calls every week from my veterans friends, 223-1300, if you're in oral health pain or if you need even if it's a cleaning, just give me a call at 223-1300 if you're not covered by the VA or by Medicaid. So that's my good news stuff, and I and the book is going well. By the way, the funds for that book, I've actually had to do a reprint of it. We added a new chapter, so now we have 90 runners in there. All that funds go to the foundation, which helps this veterans program. So thanks, Jack, for the opportunity as always.
Always good stuff, Tom. We appreciate it. And a lot of runners in that Seacoast race I saw based on the signs and the traffic stuff.
Yeah, Newcastle is hopping. There were some really, really fast runners, and then there were some tortoises like me, but I still had fun. And Newcastle, I always like to mention it, is, you know, near one of the starts of the American Revolution.
Yes, so. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.